every week, Chris and I sit down to do this podcast, and almost every week, he's got this bewildered look on his face on the other end, and he's like, I can't hear you. I got no audio. I can't hear you. Almost every week. Clough, what is the problem?
I don't... it's okay. So first, let me, I don't know if I've reconfigured stuff. I will say it's no prettier, but I just, let's see if I can throw the camera and you can sort of see if I can turn this. Okay. So there's the laptop. Okay. There's like the, see how this deals with this. Eh?
Whoa, look at that. You got like a big screen TV.
Yeah. Well, it's a big, there you go. How about that? How's that for meta? Video on video. Okay, horrible. So you know, and I got all my stuff up on the walls, like all the sort of dad stuff, and you know, I mean, you've seen, I'm in the basement, right? So come back to me. But so this massive cables, so there's the box, the switch, and then a wireless speaker, and then I have an Xbox down here that I play for sometimes. So it's somewhere between all of this. Mm-hmm. That let me put the camera back. Okay, I'm back. So I don't know why. I don't know why everything tends to reset, because I know my laptop is healthy. The cables are clean. Everything's all good. There's just something that happens. Chrome, I think, has made some changes lately, because I've actually seen on... Yeah, I'm going to push it out to the system first. Yeah, damn you, Google. But it's something has changed. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago about all of a sudden my camera wasn't working anymore. So the camera not working was kind of a surprise, because I did nothing other than click on the link that you sent to me, and then for some reason my camera stopped working. So I read some forums and say that there's something glitchy happening with Chrome, so I flipped over to Safari. So now that I'm in Safari, well, my camera's working, but now my audio is all over the place.
Chris, yo, I hate to interrupt you, but
do it.
As I listen to you, it sounds like there's a windstorm in your basement. Like, it sounds like there's some kind of whooshing sounds coming. Like, that's what I'm getting from my audio.
This is not making me happy at all. So, all right, I'm going to try something different.
Okay. Keep it.
How am I going to do this, bro? How am I going to do this?
While you think about your frustration, yes, over there.
Yeah.
My first note for this podcast is that it's Groundhog Day for Chris every week when we go to podcast. And you blame Google. Every week, Google messes up your audio. I'm calling you out on this one, buddy. I'm calling you out.
I'm okay with that.
It's that hat this week. It's that hat. Are you trying? That hat saved you this week. Now you're aggravating me with that hat.
Okay, let me try something. Tell me if there's still the swooshing when I mute my mic, okay?
Okay.
Is the swooshing back?
The swooshing's back.
Look at the swooshing. Dang, what could it be? Like, I cut. You know, one of those funny things that's such a bare bones system, and yet
it's like you work at the CBC and you've got all millions of dollars worth of equipment in front of you.
It isn't really. It's funny. It's like $60 worth of cabling, and everything else is just high dollar headache. I'm looking for suggestions. I wish I could figure what this would be, because I really... Okay, I'll try one more thing.
Okay. Remember last week you had to go to your iPhone earbuds to make something go away or to make something work? I don't know, man. I think once you get it fixed, you need to take pictures.
Give me a thumbs up if you can hear my audio.
I can hear your audio, but I still got the windstorm going on in the back. I mean, it might be a nice blustery winter day in your basement. I don't know.
Try saying something.
Testing, testing. 1, 2, 3.
So you can hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, you can hear me. Yeah, thank you, sir.
And this is episode 16 of the Decoded Podcast. Chris Clough, Roland Chidiac. Oh, the windstorm is gone. The windstorm is gone. He's got his iPhone headpiece in.
Were you doing play-by-play the whole time?
Yeah, I started with the episode number, who we are, I probably insulted you a couple of times in there too.
That's okay. Okay, so Wuxing's gone.
Wuxing's gone. It sounds like you're in the CBC studios now.
Oh, rich mahogany.
Rich mahogany. No, that's the Prime Minister's residence and office on Parliament Hill.
I actually realized it's actually also. I realized this morning that I really want to watch a bunch of Will Ferrell movies over the holidays. I was actually I don't know why it that one. So that I think that's the Anchorman.
Sorry, bud, I didn't mean to jump in there, we've just spent like, I don't know, 8 to 10 minutes boring anybody who's listening to this, or who they probably will never listen again. But this is called comfort, because what happened was every week, see, Chris did this thing about episode 3. He's like, you know what? We chit chat before we hit broadcast, and let's make that chit chat smaller and smaller every week, so that we can just become better at, okay, we're both on, hit record, let's just talk, right? And what's interesting about this is that 14, 13 weeks ago, we wouldn't hit broadcast, but I kind of like that we did. This is what happens. Like, every week it's the same thing. I plug in my gear, it happens to work. At the end of this, I unplug my gear because my family can't stand having all this stuff plugged in, and like I have to kind of rearrange my table and stuff to make it all work. But it's for Chris, this is Groundhog Day. Almost every week it's the same thing. He's like, I don't know what's going on. He does the hand gestures. He's like, I don't know what's going on. It worked, whatever. Chris is the ultimate podcaster. The guy's got it going on. And I think he saves his best for his podcast, which is fair enough. Chasing Squirrels with Chris Clough. And he probably has like, I don't even know. He doesn't record it video, so I can't see what he's doing over there. But I bet you he's not even in the basement. He's probably upstairs in some room with like his degrees on the wall, and he's got a pipe on the side just waiting to puff away as he's having these great intellectual conversations with wonderful guests. Anyway, so I'm done boring people to death. Tell us about your hat. He's wearing a hat. He's going to tell you all about it. And I think it did something positive for him this week.
I appreciate all that complimentary preamble. But it's the tape is already out there. I've already posted that this is the cave. This is where all the magic happens. There is no, I've tried once or twice to be upstairs, to be in other places in the house. And despite my constant frustration with trying to figure out tech that I really think that I have a pretty good handle on, this is the best place. Yeah. And the only other thing I'll say on that, okay, maybe it's not Google. I think probably there's something about unplugging and plugging the MacBook that the system just, it doesn't like it, right? So I'm treating the laptop like a desktop, something in there, not going to bother looking for it. I'm feeling like you've just accepted this as one of my many sort of necessary flaws to sort of get to the conversation. The hat. So the hat was a gift. We did a gift exchange, like a Kris Kringle thing at work this past week. So you're putting the little Secret Santa items in somebody's, we had stockings out. And the hat I got yesterday, and it was funny because the portable that I'm in is kind of, it's cold. Like the temperature flexes all over the place, either too hot, too cold, whatever. Goldilocksing the whole thing. I don't have a complaint about that. I can deal. Open a window, close a window. You're doing that sort of manual air conditioning. But I wore the hat for the afternoon. One, to show the individual, you know, because I kind of like it. It's a fun hat. And I've actually always wanted a hat with flaps, ear flaps, but I've never bought one. And I've been standing there in those places where there are those sort of like pioneer-esque, look like they're made with faux fur, you know, like almost like the uber outback Canadian kind of a, besides the toque, then you have the flap hat. You got those two styles that are just like appropriate for Canadian winters. So never got one for myself. This one shows up. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to wear it. It's a little, it's a funny color. It doesn't make sense, but I'm just going to wear it. So, one of the things that we do is we do a lot of email communications with parents, and sometimes it's on the daily, sometimes it's weekly wrap up. And the nature of yesterday was there was several wrap up emails that were going out to parents. And one of the emails, one of the parents was, I kind of said escalated, but you know, during pickup, came back into the building and wanted to discuss one of the emails. Now this was less about, what we had done, but just wanted to debrief on, you know, what had sort of played out in the, that day. And I have a lot of thoughts coming out of this, but I'll go to in the moment, individual arrives in the classroom. You know, we sort of exchange the pleasantries. We start to talk about the day and kind of, as I say, decode the email. And I could see right from the onset when the individual arrived in the space that they were like, the face was red. Like I almost imagine them. I can't see where the parking lot is, but I could hear the footfalls coming to the door. You know, I observed how the door opened. You know, you sort of look and do a quick measure of who's just arrived at the door, a little bit of red-faced. Just that the parent, and you don't know what direction it's going to go. And I actually, at the time, didn't even think to take the hat off. I was just wearing it. Like, it was just wearing, my head was nice and comfy, cozy. About 5 minutes into the conversation, I sort of realize it and sort of bring it. We were talking about the environment that we build in our classroom and how the parent's lead was talking about, you know, how much their child has grown in the time that they've been with us. And they really appreciate the support that we've provided in this short-term intervention. And I could see some of the color getting more to sort of like out of the red zone. And the parent actually said, when I sort of made reference to the fact that, oh, I'm still wearing the hat, he's like, no, he's like, buddy, he's like, keep it on. He goes, I can't stop looking at it. He goes, it completely disarmed me when I came in. I felt like I had to get some of my words out. But once the emotion came off some of the words, he felt like his self-control kind of got, you know, he got a better, his self-reg, his self-control, basically he got a handle on it, right? And the conversation was great. We got through everything else. We talked about strategies and structures. The student is transitioning away from us and back to homeschool. So that was all. It was a great conversation. And the parent left heard and fulfilled. And I think more able to have a good conversation with their child, because their child was waiting out in their vehicle. Like, and we were talking for about 30 minutes. So I was thinking about it afterwards, and first I wanted to go, and I told the colleague, I sort of shared the story around with some of the other, because there's a couple other programs there. And I went back to the colleague that had actually gifted me, and I said, you know, this is a pretty powerful hat, and kind of shared that experience. And then as I'm going home, I was thinking about a couple different things. I was thinking about the communications that we send home and the communications when you're moving information, the conversation, the human connection afterwards is really, really important. It's critical to it. We move a lot of information. I think it's reminded me to be mindful of the humans in that communication frame. And even though this has been our pattern of behavior of exchanging emails and we worked out things in emails, I was so, so happy that we were able to have that conversation. This connected with something that you and I talked about, is that how do we bridge the holidays? So this would have been, had we not had this conversation with the parent, this kind of triaging of the issue, this would have been something that would have been really wrestled with, I realize now, over the holiday. So it's kind of sending something home that, as I said, I'll bring it back to, I'm just really happy that the parent came back in and had the conversation and sort of looked to bring themselves down from whatever it is they were thinking or whatever it is they were feeling. And the final part, which is kind of the comedic part, it's that, you know, disarming moments. I think you and I touched on that, intentional interruptions where we sort of actively realize it could be as easy as I need to get up and stretch, or I need to do some deep breathing, or you know what, I need to look outside for a little minute. I need to pull my head out of this activity and really see it at a bit of a distance so you can recognize the power of it or the lack of power in it. Sorry. So that led me to thinking about parent-teacher nights and whether or not there's a market for me to start selling hats. And that's where I kind of landed, because it was, you think, I'm imagining every teacher, every parent has had that moment of, I'm about to go into a challenging conversation. I'm going to have to sort of find a way to see the other side. Now, whether or not you rationalize that well, but you really do, you have to find a way to see the other side. Otherwise, those conversations just go bad real fast. And the accident, you know, me accidentally wearing this silly animal Muppets hat, it was just the thing. It was just the thing. So that's the story.
I appreciate you telling the story, and the hat is a nice touch for this episode. This, a couple of things I thought about when you were explaining the hat. The first thing is, it's kind of like a nice, for me, it's a nice sign that we've arrived at the winter break, Christmas break, whatever you want to call it. I call it the Christmas break. Because it's been a long haul. So if you think about this podcast and the two of us kind of taking people through the ins and outs of what we do from the beginning, which was awesome that we started a week before school started. Now we've arrived at the first big break of the year. Like, we had Thanksgiving, but that's just a sampler for this break, right? This break, I know people like Jonathan So. They don't have 2 weeks off, or I think he got his first week last week, and he's going back to school before we do because of his balanced schedule. But we're going to put the Jonathan So's of the world aside. We're going to talk about the old-fashioned regular schooling that you and I are experiencing, where you get to Christmas, you get 2 weeks off, then after New Year, you go back. Anyway, it's got me thinking that the hat is a great symbol for the fact that it's now time to break. It's now time to take a rest. And you look like you're in full rest mode with that hat on. And then the other thing I was thinking about was when you were talking about the parents and really like communicating with them and watching them come in up high and come down low in terms of their emotion, aggression, whatever you want to call it. It reminds me of how important it is to connect with the parents as often as you can about the good things and the not so good things. And it made me think about when I communicate with my parents, what it's like. So most of the time, I would like to think that my communication with them is one where I go in with a mindset and that it's open to be changed. So I may be reporting something, and I'm more than happy to change my thinking or my approach depending on their response to my report, okay? But sometimes I go in with the mentality of, this is what I'm saying, and nothing's gonna change about my mind. Like, this is what I've observed. These are the things I've tried to make things better or to make things go down a different road. These things aren't working. It's time for the parent to know. And there's no room for, I don't even know how to say it. Like, what I saw is what I saw. If there's something happening at home, great, now I'm gonna find out. But it doesn't change the fact that we've had a rough 2 or 3 days or whatever it is. Sometimes I just report and there's really no conversation. It's, this is what I'm seeing. This is what's happening. We need to do something because this isn't good for the child. And it's not going to be good for you to hear from me. And like, it's just not, let's turn this into a positive thing or at least take it down that road. That's rare when I call. And I would say that the parents know, based on the communication they get from me, when I do make one of those calls, they know. They're like, oh, Chitty acts like, there's no room here for negotiation. My child and him, the experience they're having has pushed him to a point where, like, he's just talking. You know what I mean? There's nothing else going on here. And but I think that that understanding comes from all the other times that I communicate with them, the back and forth. It's the tennis match. That ball keeps bouncing from end to end. And you try to share with parents. And that's why, for me, Twitter is such a big deal, because it's so easy for me to tweet what's happening in the class. It's so easy for me to tweet out prompts about what we're doing or what can be done at home, because it's so natural, it's so quick, it's so efficient. I'm communicating with them. They know what's happening. They're seeing it happen. They can communicate back, or they can write me a note or whatever. But I think that's an important piece for me. And I'm hearing from the parents that it's an important piece for them, because it's not just a one-off. Like, they're kind of in the room every couple of days. And so when I make a call or send an email, it's not like, hey, where's this guy been the past 2 months? You know, they know where I've been. They're welcome to tweet back or to communicate back or whatever. And so it's just one more way to provide them with some understanding of what's happening, like mini reports on how school's going, the role that their child plays. Even now I'm totally off track, but the YouTube videos, that has been huge for parents, because they're seeing their kids' learning come to life in a way that is like authentic and natural. My students were joking. They're watching other videos from other kids, and they were saying to me, hey, that kid's reading from a piece of paper. That kid's not looking at the camera, you know? And I'm like, whoa, calm down here, Tom Cruise. Like, we're not pros, but you've got a little bit more experience, and you know, you understand what looks better to you. Would you prefer to read off a piece of paper and never look at your audience? Or would you prefer to take in some of that, some of the information that you're going to pass on and then deliver it as you're looking at the camera? Because I tell them, when you're looking at the camera, you're not just looking at the camera. You're looking at the hundreds of people who are going to see this, and they feel that. So it's these small things that I'm running into people who tell me I'm wasting my time. It's worthless. It's not helping kids. It's just a side hustle. I disagree. And this, I appreciate you kind of getting me thinking about it, because it just makes me reflect on what's going on, how we're doing it, how it's helping parents, how it's helping kids. And one more thing I want to say is, I mute my mic. I woke up this morning just starving, like I had not eaten in weeks. So as we're doing this podcast, I've got like a full breakfast sitting here in front of me, and I'm just going to keep chipping away at it as we talk. You're up.
That's awesome. Grab a bite to eat. The I consider myself an apt communicator in multi modes. So conversation, I think I can sort of craft emails, understand audience, and also speak to different audiences. So whether or not they're positionally empowered or actually empowered, kind of multimodal. The moment that flashed back to me in this, beyond everything else that I sort of described about the power of the hat, it was also me just thinking about how to change my method of communication. And that, even though it's funny, it's that whole, just because it worked the last time doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work the next time. And I think you only get the true power of that metamorphosis when you land again connecting with the human. Like, you have to make that face-to-face or that person-to-person time. I fully appreciate and have benefited from you and my colleagues that have shared the view of your classroom. I think I like, we talked about this before, that standing in the doorway only doesn't give you the best perspective about what's going on in the classroom, and definitely making judgments from the doorway doesn't give you the best view of what's going on in a teacher's or in a learning space. One of the challenges or one of the tensions in that for me is that though I do enjoy and I do learn from people's postings from their classrooms, it's still for me a singular dimension. And I need more than those pieces to fully understand what is going in there. So then I flip to being a parent, and I know there's a one of my kids' teachers posts frequently. It's interesting. Sometimes the things that are posted, I appreciate the effort to post, and I get the reason to post. Where I go is that the stuff that is posted doesn't often have value to me. So the things that I'm seeing, I get that it's a look in the classroom, but I really do, I feel like I'm standing at the doorway. Like I don't have enough information to really, because it's me saying I don't fully appreciate it because I don't fully understand why that was shared. So then I'll send an email and I'll ask about context. So I'm trying to flip around and get the thinking behind the post. And again, that's, well, what you and I do. I'm flipping between the teacher hat and the parent hat, and then the parent hat of some other kid that's in my classroom. So, like I said, I was appreciated that the parent came in and allowed a conversation to happen. I do believe that because that moment happened, that it's probably going to make definitely a better drive home between the kid and the parent. And one of the things I said to the parent was that I appreciate you coming in because I think this allows you to be a parent again when you get into the car with your child. You have some processing time to be different, to choose a different path, because some of the things that we addressed were patterns of behavior that have recurred. So now going back in, one of those things when you observe sort of, let's say, challenging behavior, let's say in your students, heck, even in your own children, is that at some point you have to say, my efforts here are not getting the results that are benefiting the child or benefiting me. I'm not coming back down from being escalated and the child's behavior isn't changing. So I believe the parent really appreciated the opportunity to be able to get the context so they didn't feel like they were standing at the door, so that way they actually feel like they have choices. Because that was the suggestion in the communication, is that despite some of the challenges of the day, we always reminded the child of the choices that can still be made and that are in front of them. I think the parent benefited from that conversation as well, because them going back into the vehicle to drive home could go and sit down beside their child and actually reconnect with that relationship. So that's that's the big picture for me coming out of that.
That's an awesome experience, and it's really awesome that you got to have it, because that, like you said, that changes the tone for the car ride. It probably changes the tone for the next 2 weeks being off of school, because it takes me right back to this week and observing student behavior throughout this week and knowing almost right away which students are the ones that don't want to leave and which students are the ones that want to leave. And I had a few conversations this week with those kids, the ones that don't want to go. And it was really nice. It was refreshing to talk to them and just say, I get the feeling that you would rather be here. And they're like, yeah, because, you know, I have something to do here. My friends are here. It was interesting, you know. It didn't really change the behavior, but my understanding of where they were coming from and where they were eventually going allowed me to take a few breaths before I dealt with anything, because I think that awareness probably saved a lot of heartache on my part and their part. And you know, you have a softer heart and more open ears, I guess you could say, when you know where someone's coming from, as you listen to them talk to you in a way that most people would consider inappropriate or rude, which isn't acceptable. But then again, you have this awareness of how you respond to this individual, how you deal with something like this. You don't take it personally. All the good stuff that they teach you how to do and how to think when you're learning how to be a teacher, it's different when you're in the middle of it. You know, like I still get caught up in looking at some of my students saying, hold on here, is there any particular reason why you're yelling at me right now? Because I didn't think we were in an argument. I just thought I asked you to do this, or I directed you to do that, and now all of a sudden you're quite loud and being aggressive, and I'm not really sure why. So I just again, I think about your job and I'm like, how does he deal with, you see, I have a stereotype of the students you work with. I don't view your students as angels. I view your students as rough and tumble types who for some reason don't fit in the regular system. They've done something severe enough to get out, and now they're with you. And I picture you like if there was a movie about you as a teacher, you know who would play you in my mind? Robin Williams, if he was still alive.
I take this as a compliment. I like that guy. Yeah.
No, I love Robin Williams, but it's his approach, his sense of humor that I kind of see you doing in your class, even though you probably don't. But I see you working with kids that you got to fix this for me. Why do I feel that way? I think it's because when I hear the word suspension or expulsion, you don't think of straight A students getting expelled. You don't think of compliant students being expelled, right? You don't think of, and I'm totally stereotyping here. You don't think of, you know, a child who has a couple of loving parents who live comfortably, you know, who has whatever they want. I don't envision that as the child being expelled. I see a troubled child. Maybe no parenting, maybe no parents, maybe no friends, maybe no money, right? Maybe there's a lot going on there for this child, this person, this student. And they do something and they get kicked out. And then they come to you. And so fix it for me, Clough. Tell me, am I right on? Am I right off? Am I half right? Am I half wrong? Like, where am I here? I don't know. Like I said, I would love to spend like a week shadowing you, watching you work, seeing the kids you interact with, seeing how they interact with you, seeing how you have mastered pedagogy. How do you teach all these different grades and all these different learning styles? I know you've commented on, you wonder how elementary teachers do it, but like for me, it's natural. And I'm not saying I'm good at my job. I'm just saying I know little Johnny needs this and I know Erica needs that. And I'm constantly going between all of them to check in and see and kind of reevaluate and suggest new things or new approaches. So fix me, Clough. Am I right on with what my stereotype or what?
I've been in this conversation before with others, and I try and pull what the questions are. So, you know, what it, your context, your observations, there's so many possible places that you're pulling your ideas from. In this case, some of the stereotypes are on point. They are. But it then becomes one of those kind of those moments of oversimplification. And what is it, if I put it to you, what is it for you that is the most comfortable understanding of this? And I'm starting to get a sense like you're no longer comfortable with your understanding of this. But I find for many, they want, when they try and wrap their head around systems and education, they tend to be fairly clear-cut boxes. And those clear-cut boxes, hey, I'm going to say the system does that. The system makes it seem like these are clear-cut boxes. I'll say myself, as someone that works within the system, there's a whole lot of gray. There's a lot more gray than it's the unreliability of the gray, I'll put it, because the moment that you assume that a certain funding line or a certain rule is going to stay the same or a certain structure within the system stays the same, you're taking your hands off the wheel and your eyes off the ball. So you're constantly having to keep your finger on the pulse of change within school to really get the best look of what's going on. And we've landed on this before that, you know, to acknowledge the moment that you sort of congratulate the members of your PLN, you know, for me, it's a matter of then trying to step just past that line of communication and see where's the wall of the silo. And sort of when you recognize where the wall of the silo, if it's right up against the new people that you just met, then it's really important to try and find a door to get out and sort of look to see, you know, if the group around you is just supporting your ideas, or are they inspiring new ideas? They even have new ideas at all. So I find that there's always a challenge, not only to get new understandings of things in the system, but also just getting outside the comfort zone of that. Because if I were to say to you, well, I did it in a different way, you know, back in October, you know, I got the opportunity to speak to power players within education across Canada. And the lead on that was the question to the group as to why weren't you suspended? And I kind of, with a little bit of comedy there, realized that that could be provocative. It's kind of cheeky, but when you think back on your own school experience, were there things that you could have been suspended for? And then lead out of that to what were the protective elements that kept you from being suspended? And in some cases, it can be as simple as what you said. You have two supportive parents at home that love you and sort of provide everything that you need for your wellness. But that sort of supportive individual doesn't have to be the parent. There are a lot of other possible, you know, coaches, religious leaders, you know, an older sibling, extended family. There's a lot of different recalculations of who could be that part of that resource base. I will say there has not been, though there are some themes around that say the student type or the child type that comes to us. But every single context is complex. If a student brings a weapon to school, they will be either suspended or expelled. Who that student is what makes it complex. So part of the box that we're in is that people outside of our program don't get to see the human beyond the infraction. And therein lies the heart of the mystery. So I don't, you know, one of the ways that I've tried to provoke people to get a deeper understanding is to look into what suspension and expulsion programs look like in your own board. And that's a great starting point, because often for an individual, it would be that if they have some understanding of the rules and regulations and the sort of like character driven understandings of their board, they have that as their base knowledge. And then when they look at the program that helps to serve these students, they kind of get it. They get, and then they have a person too that they can talk to. They might find an instructor that's, you know, that they feel like they can connect with. From the outside, I will tell you, it's been very difficult to find individuals that do this work that I'm doing. You know, I've reached out. I know everybody in my sort of board. There's a lot of little different mixes and blendings. I think that's sort of become part of my mission statement with the other cast that I play with, the other podcast, is actually partially trying to pursue other people that are doing work like me. And I've had minimal success in that. So you are on point. I think if I were to impose my sort of judgment on this, it may just be you haven't seen the other side, like you haven't seen that classroom in your own board. And I would throw down the challenge, check out and see what that is, because that's Ministry of Ed regulations, that there must be a system in place to support students that are suspended and expelled. And these things happen at elementary. So
I think I know of the system in place in my board. I just don't, it's funny, eh? Because like, you and I are connected, so it's easy for me to talk to you about this. We don't talk just about the work that we do, so it's easy for me to talk to you about your job and your work. Doesn't feel so easy to talk about that same type of work within my board. And I was just thinking when you were talking about, like when you were explaining your position and your perspective, I was thinking about the Section 23 in my board. It's like I only know of like two people, three people that have ever been there. One of them is the principal of my kid's school. And another one is a teacher I met many years ago who's still there. And the third one is a teacher that I kind of know who did an LTO there. Imagine that, eh? Imagine you look at the long-term occasional job list. You say, oh, Section 23 has an opening. I'll go there and have kids swear at me and yell at me or whatever all day. But, and again, I'm stereotyping. I don't know what it's really like there. I do know that I've gotten students back from there, and they've always been of a similar personality, whatever you want to call it. I've also seen some of my students end up going there along the way in their journey. So I have some, like, it's like a black hole. It's that part in space where you don't go because you're going to get sucked in, or you don't know if your ship's going to come back out once you go in. So you just don't go, for me. And then at the high school level, I kind of have an idea of its existence, but I don't feel connected. I don't feel, well, here, I'll give you a great example. I'll give you a great example of the black hole for me. In the spring, maybe last spring, I don't know, a spring ago, two springs ago, whenever the postings come out in the spring, I'm one of those teachers that always looks at them. Whether I'm allowed to leave a school, whether I'm not allowed to leave a school, doesn't matter to me. I look at the postings. I like to see what's going on, where the movement's happening. Anyway, so I saw a position for the teacher that gets to work at the hospital, that gets to work with students who are inpatient. I believe it was the psychiatric department. And I was looking at this and I thought, wow, it sounds like a really, the counselor in me said that sounds and looks like an amazing opportunity. The elementary school teacher in me was scared like you wouldn't believe. So long story short, I talked to my students about students in our system who are hospitalized, who can't be with everybody for whatever reason. They're not well. And three or four of my girls took it upon themselves to put together a personal project around these kids. And they 3D printed this necklace that they wanted to, they 3D printed, like, you know, a handful of these necklaces that they created from their mind and then printed. And then they wrote a handwritten letter, anonymous, but like handwritten, dear student, I hope you're well, blah, blah, blah. Then they said to me, can you please take this to the students in the hospital? I said, sure. Clough, one of the hardest things I've experienced as an elementary school teacher was how to connect with this human or humans that work at the hospital from my school board. It was next to impossible. I talked to my principal, who said that she would look into it for me, who used to work in that program at the hospital years ago. Then I even called my association, my local association, to say, who's the teacher that works there? And even it took them a little bit of time to find it out. When I finally got the answer, I emailed this person, never heard back. So I ended up just taking an envelope addressed to this teacher to the hospital. I went into the hospital and I said to the reception people, this is for so-and-so. And they're like, we don't know who this person is. We don't even know where this person works. Now, you have to look at it from my perspective. I keep hitting a brick wall. It's like a secret. Who is this person? Where do they actually work? What do they do? Nobody appeared to know. I mean, sure, I guess I could have called the superintendent of student services, but guess what? I'm not doing that. I'm not calling the SO. Hey, it's Roland Chidiak. I'd like to know. It's not happening. So, long story short, I delivered this package. I don't know to this day where that package ended up. I just know it was delivered. And I made sure to tell several of my colleagues as like insurance that, oh, yes, he did in fact do this, because I don't know. So for me, in my board, it's like it's an unknown. And I've done my like small part to try to figure it out, and I'm not getting any answers. And so I've just stepped back from it. So it's way easier for me to talk to you about what you do and how your board has it set up than for me to go do it my board, because that means I have to take risks. I'm not interested in taking those risks right now. And really, I mean, it's not like a life's mission that I find this out. and I do know the name of the teacher now, but I have yet to communicate with this person. I don't know how they operate. I don't know when they operate. Like, I know nothing. And I've tried to get information. And it's one of those things where I just don't have enough.
I think that, I think you've landed on kind of a powerful blind spot in our systems. It was something that it was something that I exist in, I guess, on the daily. It's part of the reason that my colleague and I started to tweet out under the hashtag we are access, because we knew that we knew that there were many individuals in the board that just had no clue. You know, before I came here, I knew of one of the individuals that's an instructor at one of the sites. Not that I'd ever spoken to the individual, but someone had pointed out, yeah, that's the teacher that works at the one site for students where they've been suspended or expelled. Never had a chance to have a conversation with the individual. But in general, if I were to put the question to the staff at that time before I came into my program, you know, where do the kids go? Like, where do they go when, because we would get a note in our mailbox, such and student has been suspended for X number of days, please provide coursework. So just to recap that, if a student is on suspension, the homeschool is responsible for providing coursework, course tasks, all the resources. That moves either by courier or someone drops it off, or now with Google Suite, G Suite, you can move things a little bit quicker. If the student gets expelled, then they are formally enrolled at the site. So we are, each of the four sites in our board are schools unto themselves. So you have these two different modes of, two different sort of student frames that you could be working with. Doesn't change the fact that, you know, you have multiple kids working on multiple courses for the day. But in asking, that was the only point of contact in the homeschool, from my experience, was that you would get a note from the principal. The principal is, you know, responsible for gathering the coursework. So you'd get the note saying, please provide 3 to 4 days of coursework for such a student. They will be on suspension for X number of days. So you put that out to the staff. Well, where is your work going to? I'm not sure that anyone would be able to directly speak to where that kid went, like what that kid did. I mean, who was working with them? And I think some of these small spaces, they exist, small spaces like this or the Section 23, they exist in this strange frame, like almost like we shouldn't be talking about them. And yet we have these larger, broader initiatives that get rolled out from the board about wellness and equity. And there's sort of spaces where this is kind of an everyday, there's a high concentration of the everyday. And it almost seems to me like we should be, I don't want to say it's not celebrating, but we should be sort of opening the doors on these programs so that everyone in the board can understand stuff outside regular programming. So your challenge in finding a colleague, I think in some ways that's intentional. Only in so much as it hasn't been advertised or promoted well. I think it is intentional. I think there's something about the promotion of these programs that is almost like in keeping the secret, not in bringing out the secret. I get it. There's stuff in program that you don't talk about. Of course you don't. But everyone should know each other's name. We should all know and be able to find the colleagues. This individual that you're speaking of, you know, what came to mind for me is that wherever that Section 23 classroom is, there's still a site number for it. And for me, where I would go is I'd start dropping in site numbers into our email program, because you can actually find people just by knowing what the site number is for that place. And that's easily found within our board information. So I might not know what they're teaching, but you get the site number for a high school and I can put that into the search engine. It's going to give me every single person that's associated with that site. A small space, you're going to have one or two people. In this space you're talking about, it might be one person. Or they might be associated with a school. So it's, you know, a Section 23 classroom that's in the hospital, but it's connected with the elementary school that's just around the corner or something like that. So, but I do think there's something intentional there strikes me as something intentional in historical design that keeps these small spaces kind of hidden. I'm not sure why.
I agree with you. I think the way you put it was, you put it nicely. I don't know. They're like, they're not a secret, but they are a secret. I don't know. And it's, you don't hear the thing for me is the circles I run in, I never interact with these people. Like I was at a PD session last week and it was the people in my, it was my family of schools, high school family. You're not going to run into these people. I don't even know. Well, I do know actually, because the kids that go to the Section 23 residential program in my system, they come from all over the system. So they could come from like any of our five high schools. But I mean, it's rare that I run into someone who works at Section 23. It's never happened. The only time it's happened that I can remember, like that I remember this opportunity this time was my kid's principal. Before he was a principal, when he was a teacher in Section 23, him and his wife, who strangely enough, my wife works with his wife now, and he's the principal of our kids. It's kind of funny. I remember going to an anti-bullying symposium in Toronto like 13 years ago, 12 or 13 years ago. And I remember meeting him there and just saying, hey, he said to me, hey, do you know so-and-so? And I said, yeah, how do you know him? And we started talking. I said, where do you work? He said, oh, Section 23. And back then it was like really Navy SEALs. Like you didn't talk about it. These guys go in and out. They do their thing and nobody ever knows they were there kind of thing. And then when he became a principal, I've talked to him a couple of times about the work. I remember saying to him years ago, hey, there's a couple of positions open at Section 23. And my wife was joking with me saying that I could never do that because I just don't have the personality to work there, if you could say that. And it was funny because I was joking with him, but he took it seriously. And he just said to me, listen, you know, if you want to work there, you got to know these are the things that are going to happen to you daily. Like he was very good about it. He's like, you kind of have to have an open attitude. You kind of have to be an easygoing kind of person because you're going to get hit hard with all kinds of stuff every day. And if you're uptight and, you know, you take things personally, like this might not be a place for you. So it was really good. It was one of those moments where, you know, those moments where you know to be quiet and listen, because what you're about to hear is something that you're not going to hear anywhere else. Like it's a novel situation. And something within you, the universe tells you to just shut your mouth and listen and take in as much as you can. So it was one of those moments, but still it's like, even I felt weird at the hospital dropping off the envelope. Like I felt like I was on in some weird place, some like situational thing. And I remember the ladies, it was really neat because for me, everything was foreign. Just being in a hospital kind of gives me the heebie-jeebies, but the lady said, okay, well, we can figure this out, but you need to stay. And then I looked at her and she's like, you're parked in one of the meters out there, right? And I said, yeah, almost like I just gave up $2 because I thought I was going to be in here for 5 minutes, but now you're telling me I got to stay for 25. And there's no way I can do that. I'm going to get a ticket. I don't have enough cash. Like, but she's looking at me like, I've heard this story before. Everybody comes in here, does the same thing. They come in, they expect to be here for like a minute. They end up staying for half an hour. Then there's issues with their parking. Like it was really interesting because I was able, even at that time, to step out of myself and pay close attention to the lady was fluent in her role, right? Like she gets it and she understands the client, which I was at the moment, and how I operate. It was really cool. So I said, no, I can't stay. She's like, you're parked at the meters, aren't you? And I'm like, yeah. And that's a whole other culture, right? That's a whole other shift she had to make. She's like, well, I mean, I will get this to so-and-so if you leave it with me and trust me with it. I'm like, yeah, of course. I don't think you're going to open the envelope and do something with the necklaces. Like, I know you're going to get it to the right person. So I left. I even emailed the person a follow-up email to say, hey, I dropped it off at the front. You should get it tomorrow kind of thing. Like I said, there's been no communication back. So It's just weird and freaky. That's all. I'd love to know more about it, probably because I don't know anything about it, but I don't know. And then, and I feel like they're so isolated. Like I said, I don't see, I've done a lot of PD over the past few years around 21st century learning, leveraging digital in the classroom. I've never run into any of these people. And I just wonder, like, how does any of this stuff play into what they do? I don't know. And I think I'm being a little bit naive. I'm sure there's use of technology and things like that, but I think that the work they do is like the work you do. It's so very personalized because you've got kids coming in. They could be like, you know, anywhere from, I guess, kindergarten to grade 8 for section 23 elementary. And you're not just going to pop out an iPad and say, here, start doing this. Like, I don't know. I can't even talk. I'm talking about it and I'm thinking about what I'm saying. It sounds ridiculous. Like, I feel like I'm just rambling on about it, which I probably am, but I have no understanding, no knowledge. It's like, where do you get information about teachers that do this? You know, how do I find the Navy SEAL that works amongst us that doesn't walk around with the badge on their chest? And you never see them because they're always working like black ops. I don't know. I don't know. So you're my go-to for this stuff. You're my go-to because you've done alternate ed. You do the expulsion suspension thing. You know what? I'm a little bit worried about you going back to the regular system. I don't know how you're going to do it. I don't know. This could be it for you. You might be done with teaching, Clough. You have to start something with that entrepreneurial mind that you have.
Selling hats for teachers on parent teacher night. You are, the thing that you said at the end is a question that is constantly in my mind. I'm on the other end. If you're asking, how would you ever be in that space? I'm asking, how will I ever leave? I mean, I've been in small spaces for most of my career. I do know the larger classrooms. I've done the full classrooms and that was okay. Some of the things, so there's nothing about the classroom context per se that would be, and I'll use you, that would be unfamiliar to you. There's nothing. I have a day book. I have courses that I teach. I have a schedule. I use technology when it works. I use no technology if something else works. So that type of switch ups are really no different. And it was one of the interesting spaces that I was in before, well, I was still in alt ed, when there were a couple different staff members that were added into the department. So there was sort of two of us that were the primary individuals in the department for the longest time. And then just be with scheduling and where they needed people, they started breaking up schedules and they added people in. And just to relieve part of their concern is I told them flat out, you have to design no lesson plans, no curriculum on the front end. We have all the measured, structured, we have all the assessments, we have all the lesson plans. So you're coming in, you don't have to do any of that planning. You don't, not on the front end. You have to do nothing on the front end. What I would give a suggestion to, and I said this often, was that start to think about everything else that supports curriculum. Start thinking about your soft skills. Start thinking about your decisions around the how and the why and how they're connect and the connections between the two in your classroom management tools. And I said, start thinking about harmonizing the person that you are outside of school, the best of, with the best of what you are in school, and how you build relationships. Now, usually that kind of escalated them because they're like, oh my gosh, I wasn't even thinking about that other stuff. I was okay. You know, you said, good, I don't have to build a history binder or whatever. But that's the space. That's the space that I think is has led me to sort of say wellness before curriculum. It's the space that has concern for me when I think about being in that silo or that small space because it's not seen. So my colleague and I do a lot of work finding the conversations in the board that we should be a part of, but sometimes the people talking don't know we should be. And I think often about what my transition out of this program will look like, and where my passion and at the same time where my skill sets would be best used. Because the reality is, if I do nothing to find a position, I'll be placed in a school. And because I've taught so many courses, that's a Swiss Army knife for a principal. They can say, oh, so you basically taught 95% of the courses that are available in high school. Well, here's the schedule we got for you. Now, to that end, even if I had to teach, so a teacher's schedule is three courses, full-time schedule would be three courses per semester. I will tell you, there are individuals that find it very uncomfortable to teach six different courses in a year. They're just not, it's just a thing. I don't agree or disagree, but it's a thing. So we talk about multiple preps. Where I stand is I haven't had anything less than six in a semester for a long time, because each kid coming to me in Alt-Ed or now where I am right now, they bring their courses with them. So it's multiple courses all day long. So even if I do go to a school, if I can't find a position for myself and I'm teaching six courses, that's less of a course load as far as curriculum than I've experienced in 10 years. I'm going to feel like the heat's off a little bit. I'll have the time to develop course and go deeper and play with them in a way that fits. So it's funny you mentioned the whole, you're not sure. I love the fact that you say your social worker, your curiosity was activated, that sort of therapeutic side, because that's the exact trigger that I try to explain to individuals that come in to work in some of the spaces I've been in. That's the curiosity you need. And whether you could or couldn't, that's a gift that would serve you well if you chose to be in one of those spaces. And they tend to be short term as well. In my board, they're short term. So you're not there forever. By nature of the fact, they try and rotate people through it. What's funny is that they'll rotate you through, and the default is to put you back in a large classroom, which who knows if that's a good rotation or a bad rotation. But it does make me wonder, if I do nothing, where will I be placed? I do have interest. I do have interest that I'm sort of angling towards. I asked my administration about it just the other day, and they said, oh, you're starting way too early, Clough. Because I'm only halfway through my mandate, but I like to know. I'm a planner, right?
Fair enough. Thanks for taking us through all that, Clough.
Yeah, man.
Okay, so this episode of the podcast turned into Clough doesn't know how to work a computer to start things off, and then turned into a talk about Alt-Ed and the mystery of all of it. So that's our special for this day, I guess. Is there any homework, Clough, for the people who aren't going back to work for 2 weeks?
I know, eh? Well, no, not in so much. Here's the thing. You and I, next week, if everything aligns, we gotta... I have this here that's been sitting in front of me. So that's the list from last week, okay? So we got some interesting talk walking and intentional interruptions and the dusty resources on the shelf. Actually, you know what? I'm gonna tick off number seven, because we landed on that. And maybe number six, intentional interruptions. Does the hat qualify?
Oh, I would say so, big time.
Okay, and number seven, the dusty resources on the shelf, because that was also the conversation we had about standing in the doorway doesn't get you there.
Fair enough. I mean, okay. I'm good. If they come up again, I'm good with that too.
Okay. I like that we kind of landed on it. That's kind of cool. But yeah, you know what? Here's the homework. It's about connecting with what's in front of you right now, because everything else about the homework is about connecting what's in front of you in your job. So whatever you got in front of you, dude, find a way to sort of just go deep on that.
How appropriate is that? Because this morning you sent me a link to an article called Seven Brutal Truths I Learned About Life After Giving Up Positive Thinking. And one of them was about like being present.
Yeah.
To stop thinking about, like, you have a goal and you're trying to get there, but sometimes you got to remember where you are in order to get to where you want to be, rather than always thinking about your final destination.
Yeah.
So I like that connection. I did read that this morning. Wow. Good stuff. That we could do a whole podcast just on that alone.
For sure, man.
Bottom line for me though, Clef, as we end this episode, bottom line, you got to know what you want. You got to have a plan to get there. And sometimes you got to take two steps back to take three steps forward, right? You and I have talked about this. Mm-hmm. We're both working on stuff. And it, I don't know about you, but it kills me when I have to take steps back. But then I always just keep moving forward and I get to where I need to be. So it's something people forget, the whole failure thing, eh? People just put it aside. We're so used to just saying, oh, I failed, so you never talk about it, or you don't include it in your plans. You just, it's almost like you wish it's not going to happen, but it always does. It's crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I wish you like a calm and safe week until we can connect again. I hope your kids enjoy Christmas, whatever that looks like at your house. Yeah, I have a couple of things there I'd like to say, but I think that the jokes are too hard for the podcasting audience. It'll have to send them over text or whatever. But
when the camera shut down.
I hope that your kids have a great Christmas. I hope that you and your partner have a great time with them and enjoy every minute with your little family.
For sure. Same to you, sir. And thank you so much for, well, we're not in the new year yet, so I'll get more gushy maybe at the next one, but totally appreciate the probing too. Your questions are good. I feel good answering your questions. That's a funny thing. The things that you have interest in, I feel good answering them. I feel like it's important to speak to, but I also fully appreciate your honest approach to asking stuff about what I do. I like this kind of PD. Feels like we get to stretch our legs a little bit in a way that I know I don't get to enough in my regular day. So peace and love and hugs and all that kind of stuff to you and your family. Definitely enjoy the next couple of weeks, the food and the frivolity. And take care, man.
Yeah, you too. Talk soon.
Thanks.